welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara-Kopinski. I'm very excited about this week's episode, and I think it will be particularly helpful if you are planning any summer travels. If you would like to add a bookish destination to your list, I highly recommend the Jane Austen House Museum in the UK, and this week I'll be speaking to their director. Welcome, Mary Guyot. You are director of Jane Austen's House Museum, and it is such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for the invitation. I think we're going to have a nice conversation.
Yes, so I love featuring different bookish destinations, and I had discovered the museum after reading Jane Austen at Home by Lucy Worsley, and now I'm sort of kicking myself that on a couple of trips I've been able to take to the UK, I have not made it to the museum. It just sounded so lovely. But for people who haven't been yet, like me, could you tell us a little bit about the Jane Austen's House Museum, where you're located, and your connection to Jane Austen?
Absolutely, yes. We are located in the house that Jane Austen lived in for the last 8 years of her life in the village of Chawton in Hampshire. And what's especially important about the house is that she was writing during those years. It was the period of her life where she returned to her early manuscripts and revised those publications about Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice, and where she picked up her pen and wrote from scratch the other novels. So it was a really, really productive phase during the time that Jane lived here. As I said, we're in the village of Chawton in Hampshire, which is in the south of England. And you wouldn't believe what a pretty village it is, in many ways unchanged from Jane's day.
Well, that sounds lovely. And what were some of the circumstances that led Jane and her family to move to that house in particular?
Sure, it's quite a lengthy story, quite involved. Jane was born in Hampshire, not at all far from where we are at Jane Austen House in Chawton. But after her father retired, he was the local rector. When he retired from the church, he took his daughters and wife to live in Bath, a big Georgian city. And they were there for a number of years. He died there. And after his death, the women in the family were really not in a comfortable position. They had much smaller income, and they moved around in order to really keep themselves sheltered and housed. They moved around in Bath, they moved to Southampton, they made homes with other members of the family, and it was after a number of years of rather uncomfortable circumstances that Jane's rich elder brother, Edward, offered them use of a house on his estate. He had become, the family weren't rich, her father, as I said, was the rector, but Edward had struck lucky. He had been adopted into a wealthy branch of the family as a boy, and this meant that he, unlike the rest of them, had property. He had big houses, and one of them was in Chawton, and that's how Jane came to be living in this village, back where she began her life.
Yeah, I didn't realize until reading that Jane Austen at Home book. Well, two things. I think probably like a lot of people, I had this image of my mind that Jane lived her entire life in one house that she had grown up in and did all her writing there, which I guess is not the case. And then also, it was surprising to read about how her brother had been adopted by that wealthier family. Was that a common thing to have had happen at the time?
I think it mattered in those days, where inheritance law was quite different to how it is today. It mattered to have that male heir and to preserve, prevent your estate from being without an heir and subject to all sorts of legal issues. So I think that they were minded to adopt him before that happened. I don't think it was common, but it was much more common than it would be today, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when Jane Austen did move into this to this house. What was the daily life there like for them?
Sure. They lived here. So we had Jane living here with her older sister, Cassandra, her mother, Mrs. Austin, and another member of the household called Martha Lloyd, who eventually actually married into the family. But the four women lived here in what is quite a small, modest village house. So they, at that time, it was much more rural. We're still in a very pretty village, but the south of England has developed. In those days, it was much more rural. They had large gardens and would have spent quite a lot of time outdoors because we have a bakehouse here on site. They had a donkey and a donkey carriage for getting into the local town. Jane loved walking. She would have been out and about in the local area a great deal. But they were also busy as a household. They had countless needlework projects on the go, some for pleasure. She and her mother made an absolutely glorious patchwork coverlet while they lived here. They did a lot of cooking. They grew their own fruit and vegetables. And I think also, clearly Jane found the time to write amongst all this. There's a wonderful quotation where she says she hasn't been writing because she's been thinking too much of mutton and rhubarb. But there were, it's great, there were times when she did have that peace and quiet to get on with the work. And we think that Cassandra really stepped up into that role of household management and took the weight off Jane. In the evenings, they would have been reading their, as Jane's novels went into publication, there's some lovely letters, and that's what we rely on to know what life was like here, Jane's surviving letters. We know that as her books came into publication, they would have been read aloud in the drawing room here, and invited guests come to read them with Jane. So it's a mixed picture of a very, very domestic life, but also,
right,
you know, the place where these incredible books first came into being. So quite contrasting, really. Yeah.
Right. I know that's sort of surprising. I think I hadn't pictured her being so involved in, you know, the chores of the house. And it does make it even more impressive that she was able to be so productive with her writing there. Do we have a sense of what her routine, what her writing routine was like, and how long it took her to write the different books that she worked on when she was living there?
Well, the first one that was published while she lived in the house was Sense and Sensibility. And it, like Pride and Prejudice, she'd begun many years before and must have carried around the manuscript. So she revised those whilst here. And if you look at the sort of the points at which they're published, that was in 1811. And Pride and Prejudice came out pretty soon after, right at the beginning of 1813. And then she quickly gets going on Mansfield Park, which was published in 1814. And then a year later, towards the end of 1815, you have Emma, again written from scratch. And she's revising Northanger Abbey, another of the early books, and writes Persuasion, completes that while she's still living at the house. So she's got those books in rather crammed into the short space of time, so she must have been working incredibly fast and productively, efficiently. And I think you see that we don't have a huge amount surviving on Jane's working method, but there are just a handful of her literary manuscripts, and they show, when you look at the sense of as fragments of paper with her hand writing on them, you see that she was extremely controlled and concise, and the crossings out are quite rare. When she did want to revise a major passage, she cut out another, paper was expensive, so she cut out a very small, tightly planned piece of paper, like a paper patch, and pin that on top. So it's as if she knew exactly what she was going to, how exactly she was going to revise the passage, how many words it would take, and how much paper she would need to do it. So she knew her craft.
Wow.
You know, she was she'd been writing a long time, and yes, knew her craft and knew her gift. I suppose that there's a maturity, even if she wasn't published when she moved here.
That's incredible.
I was just gonna ask too,
when you're saying different works of hers that have survived, that was gonna be one of my other questions. What kinds of objects can be seen in the house, and you know, what has survived from the time when she lived there?
Yeah. Well, the house itself is the great treasure. So the house is a village house. It is beautifully positioned on the bend in the road. So you see it from two elevations, which is rather lovely, with a garden, big, beautiful garden on one side. And then at the rear of the house are the outbuildings. So the bakehouse and what would have been open-fronted farms. So that gives you a sense of the scale of the place. And then within the house, it's both her presented as her home and furnished with some items of furniture which belong to Jane and her family. We have her writing table, which is really, for many people, the iconic object, the pinnacle of their visit being her writing table. We have items of furniture from her family home at Steventon. And we have the rooms as much as possible presented in the style of her time. These include reproduction wallpapers. There are, over the years, we've found fragments of wallpaper from Jane's day that we've now been able to have recreated as modern replicas, and they're now hanging in a number of rooms. We're having a third one made at the moment. And then around and about the house, we have fitted into... It's quite a thing to get museum standard display into a historic interior, but we manage it by putting in cases into alcoves and into cupboard spaces. And in those, you'll find some of the smaller, especially valuable, important objects related to Jane, including her manuscripts. We have manuscript letters in our collection, and we'll have one or two on display on rotation through the year. We have items that belong to Jane and her family, and some of those are, you know, world famous. There was a ring that we managed to acquire after the UK government prevented the US singer Kelly Clarkson being able to take it home after she bought it at auction. She very kindly agreed to sell it to us. So that is now on display. We have jewellery, other jewellery items that Jane owned and actually were the inspiration for scenes in Mansfield Park. So there's a real mixture. I think people really appreciate being in Jane's home and then getting very close to some of the items that she owned, and indeed in the letters, the items that she produced. So it's a real range. We're very lucky with the collection.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And I'm sure you have many Jane Austen fans sort of making the pilgrimage there. I can just imagine to see her writing desk and just to be in the space where she lived would be such a special experience. So I'm assuming there's probably people coming from all over the world to visit.
There are. It is absolutely staggering. And it's very humbling, actually, because you find some people have waited many years to come here and have traveled an awful huge number of miles. I always think if we added up all, we think we've had over a million visitors in our 70 years of being open to the public. If you add up all those miles that people have traveled, it's just staggering. And just looking outside, chatting to visitors, we're a small place, so we do get to meet our visitors, which is a very nice part of the job. And to look at the visitor book, see where people have come from, and even just looking at the local car park, you know, you'll turn around and you'll see German, Italian, Dutch number plates, and you know, that reminds you how significant the place is. Yeah.
Sounds wonderful. So when people come, are there guided tours that they participate in, or how does that work?
Right. The house is quite small, so we don't have tour guides. What we have is stewards, or do you call them docents? Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have stewards who sit in the house, welcome our visitors, and are there to answer questions and to respond to queries or respond to each visitor. As they bring them things to them. So you find that some people will have read every Jane Austen novel and will be very happy just to go straight in and immerse themselves. And others will want to know more about the family, more about the novel, and really welcome a conversation. So we kind of play it by ear in that sense. We're certainly too small to take groups around. So everybody goes through at their own pace.
And I think I had seen too that you had activities for kids too, that it is kid friendly if parents want to come visit with their families.
Very much so. There's a laid back feel here. And we designed a number of activities for kids. We have some games of the period, children to play. We have a lot of dressing up. We have the opportunity to make lavender bags from local Hampshire lavender to practice writing with a quill pen. There's a lot to do, and there is this beautiful garden. And actually, we find that although we designed our activities for kids, we have trails as well, it becomes something that all ages enjoy. That surprised us. We have to find more adults dressing up than the kids in the end. I think what I've noticed very much with our visitors is you do get many generations. You get grandparents and parents bringing their children. You get mothers and daughters, particularly. So there is that love of Jane Austen and love of the place that is passed on over and over. It's very special.
Well, that's so nice. This is making me want to plan my own trip. but speaking of that, I was wondering too, I noticed on your website that it's sort of the 70th anniversary of the museum opening. Are there any special events happening this year if people are trying to plan a trip that they should mark their calendars for or maybe plan their visit around?
Absolutely. Throughout the year, we are, with our exhibition, Making the Museum, we're being quite reflective for a change. We've had recent years exhibitions that have been focused on the novels because we've had year after year, the bicentenaries of publication of Jane's novel. But this year we're being more reflective, looking back at our own 70-year history and considering why, firstly, it was felt in the 1940s that Jane Austen's home was a site worthy of protecting and turning into a museum, and then looking at the great characters who have helped to form the museum and to establish it and to keep it running and accommodate those million and encourage those million visitors. And we've been looking at the development of our collection, the development of the house, and in the early days how, in fact, there were public appeals for those out there with material that was associated with Jane Austen to send it to us or to sell it to us. And so there's some really lovely stories that I think that everybody would appreciate. It may relate to Jane Austen and our case and our very special museum, but just the idea of understanding how an organisation moves through that journey is, I think, quite appealing for a lot of people. And we're marking our... We opened to the public on the 23rd of July in 1949, and we're marking that birthday with special 1940s admission rates on the 23rd of July of this year, and a big birthday party on the Saturday after the 27th. So there's quite a bit happening. We're quite excited.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. I saw one other thing too that sounded just wonderful that you that there's a Regency Week that the museum participates in, but there's other events with that as well. Would you be able to tell me about Regency Week?
Yes, Regency Week's been running for a number of years. It's organised, although we're in a village, we're very close to the town of Alton, and this was where Jane Austen went shopping. Her brother has a bank there, and it's still our local town. And Regency Week for a number of years has been organised by people in Alton, and it's a 10-day programme of talks and workshops, and I think there's a ball as part of it, walks, all sorts of activities towards the end of June. And as you say, we participate in that. We open late in Regency Week. We have a lovely evening opening, which is just such a pleasant, you know, midsummer's day or evening to take it easy in Jane Austen's house and garden. And we also have a talk on the Saturday. So we're always in that programme, and the Jane Austen Regency Week goes from strength to strength. It's very popular, and, you know, brings a lot of us together as well. You know, the time goes quickly, and it's very good to be working in partnership with the town and others like Chawton House, our neighbour. So we always look forward to Regency Week. Yeah, thanks for mentioning it.
Yeah, that just looked so exciting. Well, you know, it seems like your role would be, you know, a Jane Austen fan's dream, you know, getting to be there day in and out. And I was just curious, have you always loved her books? Is that something you grew up with? Or how did you sort of come to be working at the house?
I have always loved her books. And I think, I'm not sure if I'm grateful or not, but I studied English A-level. So that's, what you know, 16, 17, when you're that age. I studied English A-level. And my teacher, although Austen was on the curriculum, my teacher for some reason decided to avoid her. And I think maybe that's a good thing, because it was then in my 20s of my own accord, probably having seen the films, I certainly enjoyed those when I was that little bit younger. I came to the novels and read them purely for pleasure, one after the other. You know, returned to them since. But I'm, by background, I've been a museum curator, so I've worked largely in on design exhibitions, actually. So I really enjoy the work that we do, yeah, on interiors and so forth here. So I came round quite a long route, actually, to come to a literary house as significant as Jane Austen. And I must say that I, not having been absolutely immersed in the world of Jane Austen, I had absolutely underestimated the scale of the admiration, the interest of the press, you know, all of that. I hadn't realised what a phenomenon she is. you know, it took me a little while. It was a surprise. And it took me a little while to kind of understand all those layers. I think I do now. Yeah.
Do you? I know it's always everyone is rooting for their particular Jane Austen favorite. Do you have a favorite of her books?
I love Sense and Sensibility. I think it's perhaps because, yeah, you know, I was younger when I first read it, and it's got that freshness. You know, it's not a perfect book in formal sense, but I fell for that one, I suppose. And when, mm-hmm, you know, when you read those passages where, oh, I don't know, just at the beginning where their family's income is being cut and cut and cut, it's just, oh dear, there's the pain in it too, Rich. You've got to have a bit of that. I also love Persuasion. You know,
that's my favorite. So I was going to say I love Persuasion. Yeah. Well, I love them all, but that one in particular is so wonderful. My other reading question I was going to ask, if people can't make it to the museum yet or want to do some Jane Austen reading in the meantime, are there any biographies or Austen-related books that you would recommend?
Yes, very much so. There's an awful lot out there, and I think it's you can go beyond books as well to think about what's available online, British Library resources, on our website. The Jane Austen Societies, you've got the North American Society, which is enormous, and the Jane Austen Society here in the UK, and there are many other societies around the world. So that's a very good way in. Books, we've got the Lucy Worsley, Jane Austen at Home, which has been very popular, and I think is written with a wit and a knowingness that Jane herself would have enjoyed. And there are some also some very good biographies that have been produced over the years. So there's no shortage of reading matter. You know, there are films as well that tell Jane's story. But I would say that Lucy Worsley is a very good place to start. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll echo the British Library. I can't remember which book it was, but I think my favorite thing I saw when I visited there was they did have a page of one of her manuscripts on display, and you could see a few of those cross outs and revisions. And that was just so interesting to be that close to it and see, you know, that they didn't just fall fully formed out of her, and she really had to craft them. And yeah, I just think that's so fascinating to get to see. And then just lastly, I always like to end by asking guests if there is a particular book they've read lately that they'd want to recommend to listeners, if you have a suggestion.
I've been reading, I've got two books on the go. You know how sometimes you have one that you whiz through and you start, you know, cover to cover, and that's your regular book, and then you've got your other one that you dip into less often and you're just taking really slowly. My fast read at the moment that I'm really enjoying is the Tara Westover Educated book. I think it's had some very good press recently as well. It's a biography, autobiography really, of her growing up in Idaho. And alongside that, the slow reader is Rachel Cusk's Outline, which is the first of a trilogy. And I love Rachel Cusk's writing, which is so far and observational and at the same time tender. I really love her style, so I'm savouring that one, you might say.
Oh, that's always nice. Well, if listeners are interested, I will definitely link to those in the show notes and to the museum as well, if people want to go online and check that out. And just thank you so much for chatting with me and giving us wonderful insights about the museum. And I'm sure now this is at the top of a lot of people's travel lists, including mine.
Do come and say hi. When you make it over, please say hi.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to abookishhome.com. There you'll also find a link to Jane Austen's House Museum. If you've read a book or visited a bookish destination featured on the podcast, I would love to hear, so reach out. I'm on Twitter at abookishhome and also on Instagram at abookishhome. Thanks for listening and happy reading!